The date is July 2nd, 1981, and we're talking with Roxy Ikawana at the Utqiagvik site. Right now we're standing over by Cash and Carry.
Mound 24.
Mound 24.
We were just speaking a moment ago about this pottery that has come out of this pit, and maybe we could repeat what you said, simply so that we have it recorded on tape. You mentioned the way in which these were made, to your knowledge.
I cannot tell exactly if this piece was part of the pottery itself, but describing what the pottery is made out of in the early days. We used to dig from old sites when we were kids, and the type we found of the part of the pottery would be kind of softer than this. And this one here on one side is most likely is almost hard as a rock. The ones that we usually find are kind of soft. You can almost scrape them out with your fingernail. And the way I understand those potteries are made out of sticky clay, real thick sticky clay. In order to make it mold and dry it in fire, they had to mix that with animal blood in order to let it stay together and without too much of a cracking.
So they would mix the clay with animal blood before they made the piece of pottery.
Right.
If you look at this, I'm looking at a pot shard here that's concave on one side, convex on the other, and it has, if you hold it to the light, you can see a design here, somewhat of a pattern. It's a curvilinear shape. Have you seen many pots here that have a pattern on the outside of it, like this one?
No, I never did, because at the time I never realized what and how it was made. That only thing that I know that they have been made by the Eskimos with their bare hands, I believe.
These were all made before your parents' time. You don't,
right.
They don't remember any of this. For reference, this shard apparently comes from square 26 North 0 East. Perhaps we can move around behind the store now and look at some of the excavations back there. We're now just behind the Cash and Carry store at what we've called Mound 25. And I wanted to show you the soils here. As you know, I've been looking at the soils and the geological materials. And so I've dug this large trench to try and see what's far beneath the ground. And in the very near surface, for example, a few inches below the surface, there are pieces of bone and wood and pieces of flint that indicate people have used this area. And then down quite deep there, you see the very black layer.
Yeah.
And there's no indication that people left anything in that layer. There's nothing that indicate that human beings have left anything in there. But that black layer is very, very much like the layer I showed you out on the beach bluff, the buried surface sod layer. And I'll get Dave to hold the microphone here for a moment. I'll go down and get a piece of it and show you the things that are... This is a piece of the dark black layer from down quite low, and for example, here I've broken it apart, and there is a small twig perhaps a piece of willow or something like that. It's pretty well preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And with a magnifying glass, if you look, you can see other things in here. Pieces of grass blades and things like that. So it looks very much like...
More like grass roots or...
There are very many roots in here, too. Yeah. But there are things like this which show that it, at one time that layer was on the surface of mm-hmm. the ground. Just exactly like this one here.
Yeah.
And so I think perhaps this is very... I know, for example, just looking at the material, it's very, very similar to that that's out on the coast. Mm-hmm. But it may not be the same layer. It may not be the same age. So one of the things we'll try and investigate.
Is that thing... feels like a sticky stuff or something like that?
No, it doesn't feel too sticky.
Oh.
It doesn't feel too sticky. You were thinking of perhaps it had seal oil in it or
something like that. I was thinking of that.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. There doesn't appear to be sticky, and there doesn't appear to be anything that would indicate that people were using it.
Mm-hmm.
If that had seal oil in it and it was a place where people had been cooking or something like that, you would expect to find a little pieces of bone, for example.
Or something like that.
Like that that would indicate that people had been there. Huh?
Yeah. Something like I told you before, I was kind of hoping to find the pitch, puya, which we call it. That comes from the animal blubber that soaks right into the ground, and later on we dig it and burn it in our stoves.
Mm. I understand that people used to dig it from old kitchen areas of old houses.
In those areas, even in some areas where they usually have the place where it's level to skin animals, and like ugruks and seals, and leave the blood there.
This would be outside
the
of blubber. The house.
Yeah, outside of the house, yeah. In some places, in a good weather like this.
Yeah, almost anywhere in weather like this. No, this does not appear to have anything that would indicate that people had anything to do with it. It may be too old. I don't know how old it is. I wanted to just show you this just so you could compare it to the one on the bluff. We will try and determine how old this is by the use of a radiocarbon dating technique, and maybe we can learn how old it is. And
Here's one more. Hints that I want to brought to you that previously we have moved into different locations after the flood, and that spot where my house is located has been a pond.
Formerly was a pond.
Yeah, formerly was a pond, and few grass has been growing up through the water at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now since we have covered part of that with gravel.
To make it drier.
Try and make it drier, but that it doesn't it hasn't made it any better yet, because on lack of gravel. But there is some gravel there.
Mm-hmm.
And as years gone by from that time, since 63, I have seen grass growing up through the gravel, then up to the surface of that pond.
Huh. Do you still get water there in the springtime?
Yes, yes. We still had water right now.
I didn't look closely.
But more grass is growing now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that this is happening also at the time.
Possibly, if this were buried by gravel, then the grass would try to grow through the gravel. Yeah, that's a good point.
Then make a start
mm-hmm.
From the... old grass.
Yeah, it would come up and then it would form a new sod layer on the top. Well, that's quite possible. In this sod, in this buried material, you can easily see roots from the modern sod have grown clear down into this layer and are growing in the layer because it's very rich in food for the plant. Yeah, so it grows in that area. Well, I mostly just wanted to show this to you so you'd be aware of what we found here. I'm not quite sure. Obviously, this is too far back from the beach to have anything to do with ice depositing the material on top of it. So perhaps this is a very widespread thing here, and hopefully we will have our drilling device, and we can go around in the village and drill small holes and see if this dark layer is everywhere under the ground or only in a few places. And maybe we can discover what the origin is of this material. I had some other questions. And this is kind of a nice warm place. Maybe we could sit down and talk. And it has nothing to do with the Tiavik, but with some other things from the from the North Slope, specifically some things over in by Kaktovik. And I don't know if you're familiar with that area very much. And if you're not, perhaps you would know some men in the village that might be. So maybe we can go ahead and talk for a minute about that stuff. I've been working over...
Before you begin...
go ahead.
I have never been over there except for a day or two, a couple of times. That's all. That's all I've been.
Well, maybe I could just ask you if you know any men of your age in the village that grew up in that area that might have be able to answer some questions about the old places there.
Well, I know one person here who lives from that. He has come down from that area several years ago. He's just a year or two older than myself. His name is Henry Nassani. I know he has been living around Canning River and in that area. Probably from what he have heard from his elders, he may remember.
May remember some things.
Yeah.
Do you know if he speaks English well, or does he?
Well, not quite. He has to use an interpreter.
So we should use an interpreter, okay. Well, then I won't ask you the questions about places you haven't been. So I think that's all. The only comments I had here, I just wanted to show you what I'd found in this pit, and just for basically for your own information. And maybe Dave can now take you over and show you the house, perhaps, or the artifacts that are in the laboratory.
Yeah, we could go look at one of those first. Is that? Have you been watching that house floor come out? Or?
I saw it yesterday afternoon briefly.
Okay.
But I haven't. I know that they've come down on a layer of twigs that look to be willow twigs on top of the floor, and that's all I know. They may have found more this morning.
Yeah.
But I think that would be of some interest now. That
Let's look at that first, and then we'll go in the lab and look at the artifacts.
And over the rest here is sod, a layer of sod. And all this whalebone and timber over in the corner. And over this way is a one apparent entry tunnel, an entryway to the house, which would have ended somewhere around here, I suppose. And then over to the east a bit, or to the north rather. There's another entryway, which would have come out over here. There are a couple of upright pieces of whalebone over there. And these seem to have fallen down and through here. We're not sure whether this is two houses that have sort of overlaid each other, or whether it's... one house with two entrances and perhaps two families living in the same larger house. This mound seems to be bigger than a lot of them around on the bluff here.
What was this square number again?
This is north 10 to 12, west 2 to 4. We're taking this one down first because we want to see what kinds of things we're going to be getting into archaeologically, what kind of deposition we've got. And then the next unit that we've started to excavate is over there, which should be where Kevin is standing right, or sitting right now. That should be just inside the main room. Right behind him are what appear to be upright timbers. Really heavy-duty boards, essentially, which follow to his rear, and then another upright post there, and some more uprights back in the corner there and over here, which may have been the drying rack area at the back of the house. And more timbers here. And we haven't found any other timbers through this area. They may have been cut off, they may have been removed, or they may not. They may be too short anymore to be visible yet. Anyway, if you look at the profile on this sidewall over there, you can see all the layers of sod made almost like bricks, it seems. But we'll know that better when we head down farther into it. And we're virtually on permafrost right now in this unit, and Kevin is almost on permafrost there, so the digging is going fairly slow. We set up a heater for this unit. The heater's right behind you. We have a generator that powers the heater. I put this contraption over the top and cover it with a board, and then put that tarp over the whole thing to keep hot air inside. Most of the artifacts we found are fairly recent. A lot of things, for example, that stove lid over there, about three units down from me, is obviously a very recent period piece. There are a lot of bits of iron and even a cleansing hook, a blubber or meat hook in this unit here. And let's see, that might have been the kitchen there, perhaps. Some place over here would have been the workroom or utility area, but we don't know yet, because right now we're just stripping sod off the whole house, trying to get the whole area to thaw out a bit before we do a lot of extensive excavation.
It can be off. These walls.
It's real important to couch.
Do you have any questions?
Do you have any questions that you wanted to ask Roxy about?
Well,
what he thinks about what's going on here?
I don't know. What have you talked about?
Well, Greg was just giving us a general tour of the site and what's coming up. Particularly started talking about this square where the willow branches are overlying some planks and so on.
Roxy, what do you think those willows were used for there?
Are they only visible in that spot?
So far.
Well, the way I judge that is that they don't use willows up here in this area to keep the sod from falling down through the frames. But they do use that where they had camps upriver, where they don't carry too much boards to make a framework. But it's possible that these willows may have come from up inland, where they use willows for flooring, and probably the travelers may have brought them up here and use them as they camp and just put them away on top of their dwelling house or so, or something like that. But they are only in one spot. That's the way I figured it out.
That sounds good. We were kind of puzzled by that. But that sounds like a better explanation than what we could come up with. I assume that we're in the tunnel. Does that seem reasonable to you, looking at this mound? Can you tell where you think
different parts of the house were?
Well, I'm not quite sure on that. Yes, it can indicate that that was the tunnel over there. It's always the tunnel is on the south side of the dwelling place. So, as these bones are kind of not in even place, they're kind of rough, you know. It seems like the first building that was built here may have not in use for some time, and it decays, and later on some others may have built another dwelling place over it, something like that. That's probably how the irregular boards may have been discovered here.
Yeah, that's sort of what we were thinking. The trouble is, when you dig it, it makes it real hard to figure out when you got maybe one house sitting on another.
Yeah.
We're going to try to leave these all in place as we open this up so we can get an idea of how the whole, how everything mm-hmm. was set out. That's a little easier than just drawing it like it is. So hopefully when we get the rest of this area opened up, we'll have a real good idea of where the house set mm-hmm. in.
Yeah.
And
It looks to me like this whole area may not be just one building or mm-hmm. the house. It seems like that they may have built a different house, one after another, in this area.
Yeah, maybe one. Maybe one over there, huh?
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking we had one house over there, maybe one here. I'm not sure. We'll just have to wait, I guess.
That's possible. That's possible, because I have seen some houses that are built that far apart, or some closer.
Are those people maybe related or good friends that they want to live?
Yeah, good friends or related.
It's an awful nice day for digging. It almost seems a shame to work. It'd be more fun to go wander around.
Well, we should go on over to the lab.
Okay.
See what Randy's got for artifacts. We're over at the lab to get some identification on artifacts. And I think probably the best thing to do, Claudia, would be to read the number of it off first. And then we'll get the description so that we can key it back in. What do you think?
Okay. This is bar 2. SC7.
There's grooves on the other side of that piece.
I don't know what to make out of this one here. It seems like that it might be some kind of a made into a scraper or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Or the handle of something. These two notches here could be has been fitted with some kind of a blade that could be used for a scraper or something.
Uh-huh.
Or
A double-edged scraper instead of two.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure on that.
Okay.
This is surface collection number one. That one, Roxy, it has a hole in there. And all those cut marks, parallel cut marks in that piece of bone.
Maybe we can put them in order. That one we did.
Since this is just broken out of something, I don't know what to make either out of this one here. But in some cases, this one here has some marks still visible, probably made out of the adze when they are shaping this one into something.
Why do they put lines here?
I don't know. You see, when they were etching the bone, when they got through, they don't have 2 minute scrapers at the time. So the marks that are made by the etch will still be visible. But in some cases, when they are tying a piece of bone like this into something, into the handle, they would make some notch like that in order to it won't be slippery when they tie it into the handle or something. That would help from slipping out. But I don't know what to make of this one here. It is not made into a net sinker or something like that. It has been possibly of something that they made or into something with the handle for what I don't know.
Surface collection four.
This one here is the point of some kind of a spear.
Oh.
Or probably for seals or the type they use for spearing the birds from kayak. Those types have long handles.
Oh, so if it wasn't broken, it would be long?
It would be about double the size of this.
Uh-huh.
Or longer.
Uh-huh.
You see this point here?
Right.
That is to, after they spear it into the flesh of an animal or a seal or something, this would keep it from pulling off.
Right.
This one here. So this is the part of some kind of a spear that used for shield at the time, or the spear that they use for birds from kayak in summer.
Did they have a particular Anupiaq name for that time?
For birds is Nuyakbuk. Nuyakbuk.
Nuyakbuk.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That means the spear for spearing birds?
Yeah. Okay. The spear for spearing birds has three different. So they won't miss it, you know.
Okay. Three pounds.
Three pounds, yes. And in using this for the seal, they had just one like that. And it would be just something about that long, say about 7 inches long or so, with the hole right in here and stuck into the wood handle. They would use that to spear it, the seal through the seal hole in winter.
Surface collection 6.
This is, I don't know what you call that, but it is the blade of a knife.
Uh-huh.
A woman's knife?
Men's knife? It is sharpened on both sides.
Both sides?
It could be the some kind of a blade to spear whales or something like that. Have you seen what do you call that? Nawlak for whales. This could almost be big enough for a whale, but on the other hand, it would also be used for a knife or sharp edges, something like a sharp-edged sword.
If it wasn't broken, how big would it be?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen but I have seen some knives so long. About the handle over this way here.
Yeah, about.
About twice as long?
Yeah.
Yeah. This kind of a shaped knife, which is much bigger than the hunting knife, would be called Igluktulik. Sharp-edged knife. Both-edged knife. Yeah. What do you call that?
Oh, yeah, okay. It's sharpened on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. Igluktulik. Sharpens on both sides.
This surface collection number 2. That's a broken piece there.
It's, that came out from like we mentioned, this one could be used for the head of the spear for seals. That's flint.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever made anything out of flint? Or do you know seen people make things out of flint?
They make them into scraper heads.
Oh, yes.
Kind of rounded. And the base of it, that it would fit into a wooden handle.
Mm-hmm. Do they look anything like this one? Or are they different? This is surface collection 5.
Yeah, that's it. They shove this into the hollow, And this part they used to scrape caribou skins like that.
Oh, yeah.
So they used the blunt edge for the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's still some people that use those, I think.
Huh?
I think there's still some people that use those.
Probably there may be some people that still had the old ones as a souvenir.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that had blade like this one. Some would be much wider.
Hmm.
Depends how big they want their scrapers to be.
Yeah.
I have seen the sharpeners for these.
Sharpeners?
Sharpeners.
How do they do that?
They had a handle so long, with one end of it curved, made out of ivory or bone.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And for the sharpener at the point, they had a piece of copper. Oh. They use copper to sharpen these flints.
And they just take little flakes off to sharpen it? How would they sharpen it?
They just crack it.
And okay.
Crack it from...
Uh-huh.
The story is, any soft material can cut the hardest rock.
That's true.
This they do by cracking it like this. Hold it like this. They had the mitten, or made out of caribou thick. First, so they won't cut their hand. Put it right here, and then they put that point of the sharpener, which is copper. They had it like that, and just crack it.
Oh, yeah.
Crack it. Mm-hmm. That's how
percussion
these,
or pressure
were here.
Yeah.
Surface collection 10.
Oh, wait, I forgot to ask you on that last one. That scraper, was there, do you have an Inupiaq name for that? Piece of stone.
Kukik. The scraper, I mean the sharpener, is the kigilin, the sharpener for those flints, the one that I mentioned.
Oh, yes.
But it's not here.
No, we don't have one yet. That you said
this
was...
This one here is kukik.
The scraper.
Yeah, kukik. That acts like a fingernail to scrape things. Fingernail is a kukik.
Oh. Huh, it's good.
Yeah. Number 10.
I don't know about this here. It's got a hole. This may have been roughly made into one of the slings that are used for eider ducks when they're flying around.
Oh, bolas.
Yeah, bolas.
Yeah.
Kilamitown.
What's that name?
Kilamitown.
How would you do it with a string in here?
Yeah. It's about that long.
Uh-huh.
Strings with the handle are made out of some wings or smaller wings of the bird, and there would be around 6 of these or 8 all in one bunch.
All in one bunch.
All in one bunch.
All to one string.
Yeah, all to one string had one string. Each bolo had a string by itself, and
okay.
Then the handle just tied them together there. So okay. When they were aimed at the birds, when he released them, all of them out like that, just wide apart. And if the thrower is lucky, one or two would be tangled into that.
Oh.
The tangling of the of those bowlers would let the bird or two get in touch with each other and tangle, and then went
it's,
down.
It's like a trap.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like a almost like a net to the birds.
Yeah. Mm. Did you get pretty good at doing that?
I never tried that.
You didn't?
I've watched some do it, but I never tried that.
No?
I've watched some boys, young men, get one or two at a time. Mm-hmm. So that must be fun.
Yeah.
These they have to use because they don't have any modern arms to use. So I'm not quite sure about this. This may have been something else, too. It has been broken off. She has been tipped off from something.
Mm-hmm. And what material is that?
That's some kind of a whale bone. Whale bone or... No, it could be a
looks
ivory. It could be a piece of ivory. I don't see too good. Could be a piece of ivory.
That's a surface collection number 11.
Hmm.
It's got this point here.
Yeah. We can suggest this could be either a the stand, or part of the stand that is used for holding the kettle
up
when they had the fire.
Oh, yes.
Cooking something.
Would there be three?
Yeah, three. Three of those.
Uh-huh, like a tripod.
The size of this could indicate that. Or it could be one of the pegs to hold something onto the ground, like for the tent or something.
Mm-hmm. When I first saw this, it looked like it had been cut down on this end, like it might fit into something else. What do you think on that?
Well, like you suggested, it could either has been used to build a fire with it.
Like a bow drill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, huh.
Then if this is an ice from that has been worn out. Did you see any signs of the fire has been in here?
It looks a little blackened.
Yeah,
it's
if it
dark
is, if
here.
It is,
yeah,
it could also be has been useful to build fire. You know how they work.
Yes, with the bow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this part would fit into some hole.
Soft wood.
Yeah.
Soft wood. Make a little hollow there so this won't slip.
Mm-hmm.
Softwood base?
Yeah.
What's the name of this piece?
Neil. Neil